Hello and welcome, everyone. This is Dr. Rita Marie Loscalzo, and I really want to take the time right up front to acknowledge you for stepping out of your comfort zone. It's not easy to look at your diet and think about the possibility of having to remove certain foods because they're making you ill or keeping you overweight or affecting your energy. It's not easy to make changes, but you've recognized the importance of it as you listen to me and as I guide you through some of the steps in this process. You and I together are going to define and outline for you what I call your own personalized food allergy elimination diet.
I just want to say before I get into the presentation, I just want to make sure that you're aware that what I'm presenting is not intended to replace a one-on-one relationship with a qualified healthcare professional. I'm not giving you medical advice. I'm just sharing from my knowledge base to yours so that you might benefit from the expertise that I've had over the last, you know, couple of decades in working with people with these conditions. But of course, if you're on any medication or under the care of any physician, make sure that you run any of the little tips and tricks that I share with you today by your physician so that, you know, you make sure that you're working as a team.
So before I begin, I'd like to take a moment to just review why we're here, review a little bit about what I mean by a food allergy elimination diet and the elimination provocation process that we're going to go through. Why you're here is because you recognize that there's something in your health, in the way you're feeling, that's just not quite right. It's just not up to the level that you'd like it to be. You're not feeling quite as energetic or spry. Maybe you've got some brain fog or digestive ailments. Maybe you've got some rashes that you just don't seem to be able to identify, persistent headaches, and the list goes on and on. Or worse, perhaps fibromyalgia has been in your picture. You've been diagnosed with fibromyalgia, which is basically very bad swelling and inflammation in your muscles. Or maybe you've been diagnosed with chronic fatigue syndrome or some sort of autoimmune condition. The good news is many, if not all, of these conditions can often be helped by a properly conducted food allergy elimination process. And that's what we're here for. Doing this process on your own can be confusing at best and frustrating and overwhelming at the other end of the spectrum. I know because I've been there. I know because I went it alone when I was sitting in your shoes just wondering why these particular symptoms would come and go and what was causing them. Why was my brain in a fog? Why did I have headaches and stomach pain? And I read and I listened and I read and I read and I tried and I got confused and finally it all came together. But it was after years of struggling and learning. And so what I've done is consolidate this into a 30-day program. Does that mean that at the end of 30 days you will be free of food allergies? No, that's not what this is about. But by the end of the 30 days, you will have a clear picture of many, if not all, of the triggers for your food allergy-related symptoms. If you have a lot of foods that are triggering you, it may take a little bit longer than 30 days to fully identify them. And also, if you have a lot of food sensitivities, it generally means that your gut is very leaky and inflamed, and that's where a lot of the attention needs to be paid. And that's going to be part of this program. Giving you a full week to conduct your elimination process. We're going to review the three different methods of doing an elimination diet and what really exactly an elimination provocation process is and why it's considered the gold standard in food allergy testing. Then we're going to go through a process of determining which foods just might be your culprits and actually designing your own food allergy elimination diet. And I am committed to providing the best experience possible for you. Let me talk a little bit about elimination provocation and how that's used to detect hidden food allergies. A lot of people suspect that they have food allergies, suspect that when they eat certain foods they feel bad, or when they eat foods they feel bad. They just really don't know which foods. Others have been tested, and there's some various types of tests. There's stool tests, there's saliva tests, and there's blood tests. They all have their merits, and they all have their downfalls. And then there's muscle testing. And they can all be used in conjunction with each other as well. So when you go through the literature on food allergies, what stands out is that the gold standard, and when they talk about gold standard in medical community, they mean the test that has the most credence, the one that's considered the best test to do, is elimination provocation. And the problem with doing it on your own is it's very confusing. So we're going to take you through a process, and we're going to help you design an elimination diet based on your needs. So the process of food elimination and provocation is this. Number one, you identify foods that you suspect might be causing you a problem, or as foods that you eat a lot or foods that you crave, and we'll talk exactly about how to identify those, and you eliminate them. Or you come up with a rare foods diet, which is what we're going to go into in detail. A rare foods diet, meaning a diet that consists of foods you rarely eat, either never or, you know, less than once a month. Or they're foods that you just recently started eating, even if you eat them more regularly, long before the symptoms that you're trying to get rid of popped up. Rare foods diet is one way. Another way to do an elimination diet means removing the foods. So you're going to basically get your diet down to a set of foods that is unlikely to cause you symptoms. And you're going to stay there anywhere from 4 to 7 days before starting to reintroduce foods. And during that time, if you've eliminated the suspects and your symptoms are at least in part caused by food allergies, you're going to notice a difference. Most people do. Once you notice a difference, and it's more than 4 days, then you can one at a time reintroduce the foods, and I have a very specific process for doing that, which I'll explain to you. So the three methods of food elimination. Number one, fasting. Fasting is absolutely the best way because there's no guessing if there's still a food in your diet that you are allergic to because you're not eating any foods. And when I say fasting, I mean water fasting. I've done this a number of times. In my early days, before I really knew what I was doing, I read a book and it said you fast for 4 or 5 days and then you introduce foods back in. And so I did that. You know what? I felt amazing when I went without food. Yeah, the first couple of days was a little bit rough, but once I got used to it, I felt so good when I didn't eat. Now, when you feel really good when you don't eat, it says one of two things. One, you're allergic or sensitive or intolerant of one of the foods that you've been eating. Or two, you have a problem with your digestion and you're not digesting your food real well, and it's causing symptoms after you eat. And three, which is more likely, is the combination of one and two above. The problem with fasting is that not everyone can do it. And I'm going to help you identify if you're a good candidate for fasting. For some people, the rapid detoxification that's caused by just drinking water is just too much for their bodies to bear, and they feel awful. Not just for a day or two, and not just awful in the sense that the hunger feels awful, but awful in the sense that symptoms come up, really uncomfortable symptoms. For one person I worked with, it was symptoms like her brain was buzzing and she was having tremors. It was too much. Her body started releasing toxins too quickly. Her detox mechanisms couldn't handle it. We had to stop her fast. We had to stop her cleanse. Okay. So that's happened to me before. That even happens when you go on a food-related, a rare foods diet. But we're going to design it so that it's unlikely that for that to happen if you happen to be a slow detoxifier or have an overburdened detoxification system. The second method, similar to fasting, but you're going to just fast from solid foods. You're going to be able to drink liquids, and you basically drink fresh fruit vegetable juices. Preferably 90% or more vegetable juices, because fruit juices can can cause your blood sugars to go wacko. And when I say fresh, I mean fresh. I mean fresh squeezed. I mean fresh pressed. I don't mean V8, and I don't mean Tropicana. You know, I mean fresh done. If you're going to do juices, they have to be fresh pressed. All right? And then the third method is what I already alluded to, which is called the rare foods diet. So if you have symptoms that are related to the foods you're eating, and you go on a cleansing process, an elimination process, where you only eat foods that you never eat or rarely eat, usually eat like a couple of times a year. If you still have symptoms, it's really unlikely that your problems are caused by food allergies. It may be something else related to food. It may be a digestive issue. It may be toxins in the food you're eating. But it's unlikely to be due to a food allergy if you don't feel at least a little bit better in that period of time. And sometimes it takes longer to really feel the full results. So that's the rare foods diet. So we are going to determine how to know what you should be doing. Are you a good candidate for fasting? Are you willing to do fasting, and are you a good candidate for fasting? Are you going to do a vegetable juice diet? Yeah, and the vegetable juice diet really wants to be juices of vegetables that you rarely eat. Otherwise, you could be running into problem. Although vegetables do tend to be rarely allergenic, for some people they are allergenic. So we don't want to leave any stones unturned. The first part is a food frequency test, and it basically asks you lots of questions about your food. And it's a short period of time that you're going to be doing this food allergy elimination. It's not like I'm asking you to do a process for a month, 2 months, 3 months, forever. We're asking you to do this for a period of time before you start introducing your foods back in. I want you to have in front of you food frequency checklist. First thing you're going to do then is circle the list of your favorite foods, put a square around the ones that you eat most frequently. And the best way to go through this, you've got your food frequency list, and you've answered never, once a month or less, several times a week, all the way up to daily and several times a day. First of all, you want to mark in red. You can take a marker or a highlighter, and you want to mark in red all of those foods that you ever tested allergic to. So if at one point in your life you were told you were allergic to blueberries, but you never really knew if that was true, you were told that by muscle testing or by a blood test or some sort of test, then mark those. Okay? So the other thing I want you to mark in red are any of the foods that you know that you feel bad when you eat. And as you're going through your list, if you've already done this, just keep this handy as I just review this quickly. Any foods that you've suspected but never really confirmed, like, it seems like when I eat eggs, I feel a little bit squeamish afterwards, or I get a headache afterwards. That was one that bothered me, but it didn't happen all the time. And here's the thing that's confusing about the food allergies, is that if it doesn't happen all the time, like every time you eat the food you get a problem, then you don't suspect it. But in reality, sometimes the amounts need to build up. So for me, I didn't suspect the eggs as a part of my headaches until I just started doing this a little bit more carefully. And I discovered that if I ate eggs one day and I only ate one or two, then I didn't have a headache. But if I did a second day in the row, or if I ate, you know, a big omelet and ate three eggs on one day, I did get a problem. I did have a problem. I got a bad headache. And that was because the quantity built up. Even if you're not getting external symptoms, if you have a food allergy problem, it's not a good idea to just eat that small amount that doesn't cause the external symptoms, because they're triggering inflammation in your body on a deep level. Inflammation can damage you. It can irritate small vessels. It can irritate your nerves. It can aggravate your immune system. And it can cause havoc in your digestive tract. So here's a biggie. Go through the list. And any foods that you crave, like, wow, I really love that food. I really want more of that food. Mark those in red as well. Any foods that you love so much that you're unwilling to give up, no matter what the cost to health. if there are any foods that you are that attached to, that you're not willing to give up if you find out that they're hurting you, those are the foods you probably most likely need to give up. And you may decide, I can't, I'm not going to. You may find that when you get everything else under control, that if you have those just very occasionally, it works. And you may find that you really never can. But I guarantee you that when you have the rewards of feeling good, and then you eat that food, and you feel bad, you'll decide on your own that you're not going to do it. So I would recommend for now is that agree to give up those foods during this process, knowing that you can have as much as you want when you add them back into test. And if you find out that they are causing a problem, at least you're making an informed decision that I know this is bad for me and I'm doing it anyway. And I know the repercussions, but I'm doing it anyway. And most likely, my guess is that you're going to find that you're going to not like the way you feel and you're not going to do it anymore. The reason that foods that you crave are problematic is that they oftentimes trigger an endorphin reaction. It's kind of like an emergency stress reaction that causes all these feel-good hormones to be produced to make you feel better, to get you over the pain. Okay, and you just keep craving it. Things like breads actually contain morphine-like compounds in them, the gluten does, when it's broken down. There's actually 20 different morphine-like compounds that have been identified in gluten. So it has nothing to do with willpower when you eat a piece of bread and you can't stop. It has everything to do with biochemistry. So we're also going to have anything that you binge on, that you tend to binge on, even if you don't crave them per se, but when you do eat them, you tend to binge on and eat too much. Or you continue to eat them, even if you're no longer hungry, they become suspects. Okay? So any processed foods, why? Not because you're necessarily allergic to processed foods, but the processed foods contain things that can aggravate your digestive tract and weaken your immune system. Remember, we talked about we don't just want to get rid of the foods you're allergic to. We want to get you to the point where your body no longer reacts and that you can heal the underlying dysfunction. So all processed foods. Then I want you to mark also in red any foods that you eat more than 3 times a week, except for those you've just recently started to eat. Like just say that you just discovered arugula and you found out it was really good for you. And just over the last couple of months, you've been eating arugula. You've been eating it every day. But you never had arugula before, and these problems have been with you for years. It's unlikely that arugula is causing your symptoms. Okay, but we're going to just do the first pass through and then we're going to take another pass through. We're going to also mark in red anything that has caffeine or decaffeinated versions of those, like coffee, tea, and soft drinks. Again, why? Because of their deleterious effect on your immune system. Same thing with alcoholic beverages, but even more so with alcoholic beverages is that most alcoholic beverages are made from grains, and grains are on the suspect list for many people. So grains are in, corn is just typical and wheat are typical in grain alcohol. And then beer and wine, beer usually has hops, barley, those sorts of things, and barley is a gluten-containing grain. Okay? So any foods that contain oxidized fats, the reason for that, oxidized fats are fats that have been heated or processed in such a way to make them inflammatory to your body and to cause free radical damage. And again, we're trying to heal during this process, so we'd like to eliminate those during the elimination process. Sweeteners like sugar, agave, maple syrup, rice syrup, those are problematic in that, again, we're trying to heal the gut and get your gut repaired in such a way that you can actually heal the food allergies and heal the lining that's allowing the food molecules to get into your system. One of the reasons and triggers for food allergies is that your digestive tract is inflamed and the spaces between what's called the villi get blunted. And then the villi themselves get blunted and you get holes called leaky gut. And instead of your intestinal lining filtering the food so that you just get small, fully digested particles in, you allow larger molecules in. And when you allow larger protein molecules into your bloodstream, your body mounts an immune response and attack. And any wherever that happens to be happening, wherever the location of the assault tends to be is where you'll get inflamed. So you may have more of the antibodies built up, you know, the army men built up against these foods, maybe in your sinuses, maybe in your gut, maybe in your brain. And that's where you'll get some of your symptoms. Okay? Then any foods you're also going to, that you deliberately avoid for health or spiritual reasons. So you'll mark foods off that, like they may be the foods you never eat because I don't eat M&Ms because M&Ms are bad for me. Or I don't eat beef because, you know, my religion doesn't allow it, or because I'm ethically opposed to the killing of animals. For whatever reason, you avoid a food, mark it in red, because we're not going to ask you to eat foods that you deliberately avoid for whatever reason. And then we're going to have you mark off in red any of the foods that on the top 9 most common food allergens list, and those are gluten. And where you're going to find gluten is in wheat, rye, barley, kamut, spelt, and triticale. And then dairy, which is found in milk, cheese, sour cream, ice cream, and baked goods. Then we have corn. And corn is hidden in so many places. So that's why I had you take off processed food, because then you don't have to worry about the hidden sources of these allergens, right? You can, if you just eat foods in their whole state, and they can be cooked or raw, it's okay, but it's foods that are in their whole natural state. Like there's a big difference between potato chips and a baked potato. Huge difference between them. There's a huge difference between sweet potatoes as a whole thing and sweet potato chips. And there's a huge difference between a lot of the processed foods and the whole natural versions of them. So in addition to these, so this corn, soy, eggs, peanuts, strawberries, citrus, shellfish, and chocolate, those are all on the top 10 allergy list. And they're listed in this exercise, so you don't have to memorize them. You can print them out. Mark those off on your list. So those are the no foods. The ones that are marked in red so far are the no foods. We're not going to include those during your elimination diet phase. Does that mean you're never going to include them again? No. Does that mean you're definitely have a problem with them? No. But we want to get rid of things that are suspicious or damaging to your body during the elimination phase so that you have the better likelihood of feeling really, really good. Next, we're going to highlight our go foods. These are the foods that are not likely to be trigger foods for you. So I recommend using a green highlighter or pen to mark these foods. And these would be foods, all foods you never eat. And since we've already eliminated the foods that you never eat because of spiritual reasons or health reasons, those are already marked in red, you're left with foods that you never eat just maybe because you've never eaten them before or tried them before, or maybe you don't like them or you just don't do them. Okay? There shouldn't be too many that you never eat. And we're going to take this next further. If you don't have any that you never eat, we're going to actually move to the next level, which would be the ones that you eat less frequently. And again, foods that you've recently added to your diet because of their health benefits and you had not eaten before your symptoms started, you can mark those in green as well. So in the case I said before, like say you suddenly started eating arugula, you can put arugula in your go foods list. You just started taking a spirulina powder supplement because you heard it was good. You've never had a problem before you started it. It's unlikely that that's creating a problem unless you started it and then you noticed a situation. So those are your definite go foods. And then with your yellow highlighter, you know, we're kind of simulating our traffic lights. With the yellow, you're going to go through the list of foods again and underline anything that has sugar substitutes like stevia and xylitol. In some people, those cause digestive upsets or cause problems, so we don't know about you. But we're not ready to take them off completely yet. We're going to see how it goes. And then any remaining grains or grain products, like crackers, pasta, bread, chips, they can be contaminated with gluten or contain ingredients or corn that you are sensitive to. A lot of times they contain dairy products or eggs, but also the fact that they are processed. So we're going to try to just eliminate those, okay, during the process. Now, if you almost never eat quinoa, that's already been marked in green, that's fine. If you've never had, what's another one, millet before, and that's on the list, fine. We're going to give that a try. So the next thing I want you to do is to print out Designing Your Elimination Diet, and it's the food allergy grid. It's got five columns. The first one says food category, and then it has day one, day two, day three, and day four. And what we're going to be doing with this is after we go through the list of foods and we come up with our own elimination diet, we're going to come up with a group of foods, at least four, in many of these categories. It doesn't have to be in each of these categories, but in enough of these categories to give you enough food to make it through a day. So let's go through this, and then I'm going to talk about how do you know if you're a good candidate for fasting for all or part of your elimination phase. The next step that we're going to do is we're going to look at this chart, this grid that says rare foods, diet, grid, and food plan. We're going through the list and we're taking the foods that you never eat or rarely eat. And you don't do so by choice, you just do so because you just don't ever do it. Then those are the foods you're going to eat a lot during this phase, during at least 4 days. Once the 4 days is over, you should be noticing a difference. You should be noticing that you're feeling better, you've got rid of a lot of the foods. And then what I would recommend when we talk about the reintroduction phase is that you start with adding back green leafy vegetables and seeing if those create a problem. And if they don't, then she'll continue to eat those. So on this food category list, let me explain this sheet, this grid. On the food category list, there's green leafy vegetables, salad vegetables, rainbow vegetables, herbs and spices, fruits, starchy vegetables, seeds and nuts and oils, grains, legumes, meat, fish, if you're not vegetarian. It doesn't mean you have to have foods identified in each of these places. But what you need is enough food to help you make it through the day. You can eat, you know, 4 pounds of broccoli in a meal if you want to. That's fine. But if you want to eat, you know, broccoli with a piece of fish or broccoli with a potato or broccoli with some sort of legume or grain that you don't eat on a regular basis, lentil or quinoa or something like that, you want to make the food simple, you want to make the meals easy, and you want to have 5 foods or less at each meal. Okay? So you need to have enough of a variety to choose from, but you're going to be choosing the foods that are in your never or once a month or less categories, as long as they don't cause you a problem, as long as you're not avoiding them because of a problem you've had in the past with them. So as a review, you're starting out by making no's, putting a red mark on all the foods you've ever been allergic to, all the foods you know make you feel bad, even if it's not an allergy, you just get a digestive upset from it, all foods that you suspect an intolerance to, somebody muscle tested you for, you kind of noticed that you might have a problem with it, all foods that you'd never eat no matter what the health benefit. So if you've said, I hate kale so much that I will never eat it, I don't care how good it is for me, mark it off. You're not going to eat it. Simple as that. You already told me that. Mark all the foods that you crave and any foods that you'd be unwilling to give up, regardless of health implications, you've got to mark those off during this process because those are most likely to be a candidate. Of course, then the processed foods, the alcohol, the caffeine, and all that. And then any of the foods you eat more than 3 times a week, unless you've started them recently. So foods that you eat on a daily basis are suspects. If you come up with a list at the end that doesn't have much food on it, then we'll talk. I want you to have, once you've identified all those no's, on the maybes, you can go back and say, well, do I have enough of the foods from the yes category? And if your grid is kind of sparse, then we can relook at some of the maybes. And the maybes are things like quinoa, millet, you know, grain, any kind of like rice cakes, things like that, non-gluten breads. Those are the maybes. So if you don't have enough on your calendar here, and you should have nuts and seeds. So I put the nuts and seeds, the grains, the legumes, and the meat and fish at the bottom, because there, it's optional. You're going to choose. You may not eat foods in each of these categories. You may be primarily raw foodists and you don't eat any starches and grains. Great. You don't have to, right? You'll just be eating more nuts and seeds and fruits to fill you up. Okay? And you just need to identify foods in those categories. So decide which categories you'd like to include. Cross off the ones you're not. If you're a vegetarian, cross off the meat or fish. If you don't eat cooked foods except for maybe cooked vegetables, like I don't eat cooked foods except for vegetables, so I would cross off the grains and the legumes and the starchy vegetables, right? I would also say, well, I'm having trouble with fruit right now because of my blood sugar. You know, say you just got off of the Before Be Gone program and you're still having issues with fruit, you'd cross off the fruit. You're not going to include fruit. So basically what you've got are green leafy vegetables, salad vegetables, rainbow vegetables, herbs and spices, and nuts and seeds. So basically you're going to do at least 4 days of just nuts and seeds and fruits and vegetables. Sound like a good plan? Well, it's a very good detoxification plan. And you're going to feel better just by going on that, even if you were not allergic to any of the food, if you've been eating some of the things that are harder to digest. But you're going to come up with foods. The next thing that we're going to cover is your detoxification pathways test. And that was the test that asked you questions and said at the end that, you know, if you have very altered metabolism of detox, if you have good detox mechanisms, and that was at the end of that. So we're going to cover one of those. Some people do phenomenally with fasting. I do phenomenally with fasting. I've worked with people who say, yeah, I feel great when I fast. It's when I eat that I don't feel good. So for those of you who are going to choose to do the fasting, number one, the score at the end of this program, this thing, so it's basically a range of scores based on your answers to these questions. If you have a very high score, it means that your detoxification systems are burdened. If you've answered to the question, have you ever fasted on water, yes, and you felt lousy when you did, that's a clue you're not going to do that. If you've got a high score and you've had bad results with fasting, that explains why. We don't want you to fast during this. We want you to eat enough calories, but we want you to eat below allergen calories. So if your score is zero on this detoxification quiz, that means that your detoxification mechanisms are humming along and you can use any of the elimination diet options you'd like to. You can do fasting, you can do juicing, as long as unless you've done them before and had a bad reaction, but unlikely if you have a score of zero. If your score is between 1 and 5, your detoxification mechanisms are overall working pretty well. You can most likely be very comfortable fasting or juicing during the elimination phase, unless, of course, you've done it before and it made you uncomfortable. If your score is between 6 and 9 on this quiz, your mechanisms are mildly impaired. What that means is if you were to do fasting or juicing for your elimination phase, then you would probably not feel so good for the first few days. But after that, you would feel fine. If you've ever juiced or fasted before and your score is between 6 and 9 and you had good results, you really liked it, then you're welcome to try it during this process. And I'll give you the specifics in just a moment of how to do that. If not, then you want to go with the rare foods diet approach. If your score is between 10 and 19, you have moderately impaired detoxification mechanisms. You could benefit from a fast or a juice fast, but you might feel really bad and you won't get a good idea of whether you're feeling better as a result of eliminating your toxins because you'll be eliminating your allergens because you'll feel worse because you're eliminating your toxins. Right? So I would prefer if your score is above 10, that you probably choose to do the rare foods diet, unless, of course, you have fasted or juiced in the past and done well and felt good, then you're welcome to do it. If your score is above 20, you most likely have very impaired detoxification mechanisms, and you're going to need a lot of extra support to successfully detoxify. And therefore, it's not a good idea at all that you do fasting or juicing. And a better idea is to follow the rare foods diet plan and to make sure that you're eating enough to keep your energy levels up so that you don't go into a serious, very strong detox approach. And if you're pregnant or nursing, you definitely are not going to do the fasting. You're going to do the rare foods diet. If you have serious blood sugar swings, then you're not going to do the fasting. All right? And if you feel cranky, irritable, dizzy, unstable, if you miss a meal or space meals longer than 3 hours apart, then you're not going to do fasting. You're going to do the rare foods diet. So let me summarize the profile of a person who fasting would be good for. Number one, if you scored 5 or less on the detoxification survey, and you've fasted before and felt great, then fasting would be good for you. The profile of somebody who it's not good for, you have greater than 20 as a score on the detox profile, or you have fasted or done juicing before, and you just didn't feel good the whole time, and it was hard for you to recover your strength and stamina afterwards. Okay? And then there's all of you that fall in between. If you have questions about whether you qualify, if you really are curious and you'd like to try fasting for a day or two or three or four, then do your analysis and bring your results to me on the call, and we'll help you to decide. Okay, the last thing I want to talk about is tracking. There's the food allergy symptom tracker, and there's a PDF version and Excel version. What I'd like you to do right now is open that file up and have that in front of you. It's open. This is a very comprehensive sheet to help you to track your symptoms. So as you start your elimination diet, I want you to start tracking what you're eating. So what you'll see is a wider column towards the middle third of the page, or the first third of the page, that says food and beverages. That's where you're going to write down your meals. So you'll start out by saying the date. My energy level on a scale of 1 to 10, it'll tell you up at the top how to rate those. On the scale of 1 to 10, my energy level is a 9. My stress level is a 5. My pulse. Now, why do we have pulse there? Pulse is a way to tell if your body's sensitive to foods. It's not 100%, but it's just adding to the mixture. So if you take your pulse before each meal, and I don't expect that you're going to remember to take it before every meal, but if you take it before the meal, and then you take it again after the meal, and it's gone up by more than 10 points, that's a suspicious food, or the foods in that meal are suspicious. Okay. Unlikely to be happening during the elimination phase because you've eliminated foods. But before you actually start your elimination phase, this will be a good chart for you to fill out over the next few days, and that will help you to identify further any suspicious foods. So any food that causes your pulse to go up 10 points or more after you eat it, you want to put that on the suspicious list and leave it out during the elimination phase. Okay, if you have a glucose meter, you can take your glucose before, because sometimes when you have an allergic reaction to a food, the glucose goes up. Those are more the people that have been on the Before Be Gone program and know how to check their glucose. So you write down all the foods and beverages. If you've had any more water, you write that down. You check your pulse after. You check your glucose after. And you just tune in to what's my energy like. You may eat a meal and then 15 minutes later, you feel really tired. So your energy went from a 9 to a 2. That's another clue that some of the foods in that meal are suspects, and you're going to mark them in red on your food frequency chart. Okay. And then throughout the day, you're not going to necessarily have a bowel movement with every meal, but if you have a perfectly working system, you will. But mark another line for your bowel movement, or put, you know, within there, you had the time you had the meal, put the time you had the bowel movement, and you can look up at the top to see how to rate the bowel movements. You know, certain bowel movements indicate that you're having an issue with your digestion. Your emotional state, are you stressed? Are you calm? Are you relaxed? Are you irritated, frustrated? Write that down. again, exercise is there. If you're exercising, use a separate line for exercise. Don't put it on the same line as your food. So say you ate at 9 and then at noon you ran. You have another entry that says 1:17 noon run, and you write the exercise time and type over there. The reason we're doing that is to just see, you know, how things affect you. And three important columns are those last three. This is where you're going to record throughout the day, either related to a meal or not, when you have pain. If you have a headache, if you have stomach pain, if you have joint pains, you note them down, you note the time, you note the location. And we're going to teach you how to be a good food allergy sleuth so that you can tell if maybe one of these foods that you're eating is causing that. And when you go on your rare foods diet, your elimination diet, or your fast, and you see a decrease in those pains, that's going to give you a clue that, I'm on the right track. Before I started my elimination diet, I had pains, you know, 3 or 4 times a day at a level 8. And now I'm only having pains once a day at a level 2. That shows that you've had a major improvement. And so when you do this over the course of several days, you're going to get clues as to how food's affecting you. And we're going to help use this information in helping to design our reintroduction phase, our provocation phase. And then any other symptoms that you have, you can put them on the outside column and rate them. A rash, itching, stuffy sinuses, buzzing in your head, whatever happens. Anything at all like that happens. Okay? All right, so this is your chart. Now, what I recommend that you do is you print out several copies of this chart, staple them together, and carry it around with you. And that way, whenever you eat something, you jot it down. If you're the techie type and you like to do it online, we do have an Excel spreadsheet, and that's the other file. It's the identical thing to this. Identical. Except it's in an Excel spreadsheet, so you can open it up and you can write things down. I know some of you who like to keep really good notes, what you like to do is print off the charts, keep track of it, and then when you get home at night, you transfer the information into your Excel sheet. The cool part about putting things in an Excel sheet is that you get to be able to see some trends.